Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, you're about to get smarter in just a few minutes with Curiosity Daily from Discovery. Time flies when you're learning super cool stuff. I'm Nate.
And I'm Callie. If you're dropping in for the first time, welcome to Curiosity, where we aim to blow your mind by helping you to grow your mind. If you're a loyal listener, welcome back.
Today, you'll learn about the surprising effect our immune system has on our emotional health, a new discovery about the biological clock of plants, and how researchers are rediscovering the science of psychedelics.
Without further ado, let's satisfy some curiosity. Researchers at Mount Sinai in New York have discovered an unexpected mechanism that boosts the effects of stress on our brains, and not in a good way.
All right. We've talked a lot about stress and its effects on our brains and our emotions, and I don't think it's ever been good. So what makes this different?
Well, to oversimplify it a bit, this discovery goes bone deep. But let's back up a bit. So researchers have long known that lots of people who suffer from neuropsychiatric disorders like major depressive disorder or post-traumatic stress disorder often have a certain level of inflammation associated with it. And often those disorders are stress-induced.
Right. As I understand it, stress often just leads to inflammation. So that makes sense.
Exactly. But the source of that inflammation was always thought to be in the brain, right? Like all emotional health begins and ends in the brain. But the study found that at least sometimes the mechanisms that drive inflammation come from our own immune system and specifically from our bones.
Wait, so it's like our immune system is causing depressive disorders?
Okay, not quite, but close. There are these immune cells called monocytes that originate in the bone marrow. When stress hits, monocytes that have been released into the blood can be recruited to the brain. That's where the damage is done. They release an enzyme called matrix metalloproteinase 8, or MMP8, that breaks down proteins in the brain.
Okay, I think I'm following, although it sounds a little like a foreign language. Can you just translate it a little bit?
Yeah. So the science is actually pretty complicated, but that MMP8 actually changes the brain's configuration, which changes how neurons function. The end result is impaired social behavior and altered reward mechanisms.
Yes. Thank you for clearing that up so very much. So the stress causes the brain to invite the enzymes over, and they wreak havoc.
Yeah. So to give you an example, they actually conducted the study on mice. A group of mice were placed in an enclosure with a bully, a dominating and aggressive mouse. Over time, the presence of the bully caused chronic stress. The mice that were found to have that enzyme released into the brain became rather withdrawn and antisocial. They didn't want rewards like they normally would. They even started to have more chronic systemic inflammation and gastrointestinal disorders.
Symptoms of depression.
Oh, that's right. But there were mice whose behavior didn't really change all that much. And it turns out they were resistant to the immune response that was triggering those brain changes.
Wow. So if I'm hearing this right, that would mean that the immune response that comes out of our bones could actually be causing those neuropsychological problems.
Yeah, well, causation is a tough thing to prove, but the study showed that these monocytes played a critical role in stress-induced brain changes, which challenges some existing thought behind depression and stress disorders.
So in other words, they found a link, but maybe not a cause.
Yeah, but the bigger thing here is that this study shows the connection between our brain and our immune system is more profound than we thought. It opens up all new roads for research and hammers down on the importance of more holistic approaches to emotional well-being and mental health.
So to treat depression, it's not just about targeting the brain. Some of that inflammation could be coming from other parts of the body. So they could just target the enzymes from the bone marrow to get rid of the stress-triggered symptoms.
That's definitely something they're looking at. After all, if the mice are resistant to this mechanism, maybe humans could be too, with a little bit of help.
Climate change is posing a huge threat to ecosystems everywhere. But one place it could have devastating rippling effects is on the farm.
Sure, and we've talked about the potential damage climate change could have on our food supply in the past. There's drought, there's heat. I mean, even the amount of salt in the soil is changing. I know there's a lot of science going into the search for more robust crops, right?
Absolutely. And lots of that research is going into ways to fundamentally change plants so they don't need as much water, or so that they can survive potential infestations that are made worse by a changing climate. Tools like CRISPR are at the forefront.
Sure. And the crops as we've produced them might not fare so well, so we could just make a few changes.
Well, here's a twist. A new study has found that plants might actually already have some of the tools in place to withstand some of climate change's worst effects. And one of those tools is triggered by a plant's circadian rhythm.
Circadian rhythm. That's our internal biological clock, right? Like, it's the mechanism that helps us know when to wake up and when to go to sleep.
Yes, and when to eat lunch, and when to do our focused work, and when to do mundane chores that don't take much brain power. The circadian rhythm literally drives our day. We evolved to function right along with the spinning of the earth, and it turns out plants did too.
Of course they did. That actually makes a lot of sense, but it's funny. You think of an internal clock as something that exists in the mind. We need to perceive the typical day and night cycle in order for it to work. But then again, plants can't grow without the sun, so they must be tapped into that cycle somehow.
Well, not only do plants have a circadian rhythm, earlier research has shown that their internal clocks regulate up to 90% of their genes. So they're dominated by their circadian rhythms. That clock has a hand in responses to heat and cold, light, and even seasonal changes. And if you think about it, their circadian clock is arguably even more essential to their existence than ours is to us.
Sure. So their clocks tell them exactly when to, eat up the sunshine, so to speak, or when to soak up the water.
Yes. Not only that, but how much water to soak up and how much energy their cells should put into growth. And that's where this study comes in. The researchers wanted to know how plants' circadian rhythm helps them handle stress.
Oh, like the stress of not having enough water or the stress of being stuck in soil with too much salinity.
Yep. So to understand this study, we have to go a little deeper into the internal clocks of plants. The circadian rhythm in plants involves a network of genes and proteins that operate in feedback loops, turning specific genes on and off at different times of day to optimize all of those planty things we mentioned, like growth and photosynthesis and water uptake, all of that.
So let me see if I've got this right. The sun comes out blazing and a protein is triggered that turns on a gene that controls photosynthesis. But then the sun sets and maybe a new protein is triggered that turns the gene off.
Yeah, that's basically right. So this study discovered a protein called ABF3 that is kind of ninja when it comes to dealing with drought. It's the foundation of a feedback loop that allows plants to fine-tune their stress responses to the water and salt levels throughout the day.
Wow. So if this protein creates a feedback loop that already exists, how are some crops still in danger from climate change?
Well, this feedback loop is really good, but it's not perfect. Plants that become overly stressed will go into survival mode and stop growing, and eventually they'll die. But what if scientists could fine-tune that existing feedback loop to encourage even more efficient water uptake, or to get the plant to push the limits of growth despite the levels of salt in the soil?
So maybe it's like an athlete with tons and tons of natural talent. They can usually do pretty well in races, but if you give them a great coach and train them, they come in first every time.
Well, that's a great analogy. The more we know about our plants' natural abilities to handle environmental stress, the more we can help them survive what's coming.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Some 70 years ago, scientists began research on the psychiatric potential of psychedelic substances like LSD and psilocybin.
Acid and magic mushrooms, in other words.
Yeah. And as just about everyone knows, the research ended as quickly as it began. Drug laws and social perceptions took these drugs out of the lab and gave them a bit of a bad rap. But recently, as we've reported on the show in the past, there's been a pretty big resurgence in scientific interest in psychedelics.
Sure. I know that there's been lots of positive results from studies on psychedelics' effects on things like PTSD and depression and anxiety, right?
Absolutely. The perception-shifting power of these substances is off the charts, but there is a problem. The gap in research is decades long, and scientists are scrambling to create a new vocabulary for the science of psychedelics.
Yeah, I get that. That's something I didn't really think about. Like, so many drugs and treatments have just absolutely measurable effects, right? Like, if you want to test a blood pressure medication, then you take a measurement of blood pressure to see if the drug is working. But psychedelics affect perception, which is, of course, subjective. So, like, how do you measure the very personal and probably, honestly, kind of weird experiences that happen in people's minds?
Well, see, that's kind of the question, isn't it? But their effects are profound, and there is enough evidence to show that these drugs could provide life-saving treatment to lots and lots of people. But how does one accurately and objectively describe what they do?
Could there be like a survey or questionnaire or something like that?
Okay, it actually turns out there is. Back in the 1960s and 70s, a survey called the Psychedelic Experience Scale, or the PES, was developed to measure the psychedelic experience in a comprehensive manner. And now a team of researchers has updated it to better reflect the experience of those people they observe in their psychedelic studies.
Okay, so what kind of data do they gather?
That's actually the most fascinating thing about this. Because the experience of taking psychedelics is so incredibly complex, the scales are focused mainly on how to describe those experiences. So, for example, in the updated version, there are four new subscales that tell you a lot about the PES as a whole. And the first new subscale is paradoxicality.
That's a good word. I assume it has something to do with paradoxes.
You got it. It describes the feeling of experience where conventional logic just fails. So someone who experiences a high level of paradoxality will be able to hold two opposing thoughts at the same time or to feel the coexistence of contradictory principles. So imagine being able to understand something as both existing and not existing at the same time.
Okay, sure. That's hard to imagine.
Oh, exactly. But it's common enough in psychedelic experiences that researchers need a way to put language to it. Another subscale is connectedness, which is another fairly common effect. People feel a sort of sense of harmony within the world.
I mean, that part sounds nice.
But it's bigger than that. In fact, people report that the perceived boundaries between them and other people just sort of dissolve.
Nope, you lost me on that one. Not sure what you mean.
Okay, that's the challenge of trying to study psychedelics. In this case, it's hard to explain, but the concept of you either melts away until you feel like you're just a seamless part of basically everything.
All right. Well, all this is a testament to the incredibly complex nature of personal experience and perspective.
Yeah, but to really understand the potential of these drugs to treat some of the toughest disorders to treat, scientists need to develop a consistent language. Another subscale deals with visual experience, the vivid and sometimes transformational things that people imagine seeing, patterns and colors that aren't there, for example. And there's a subscale for distressing experiences because, you know, sometimes these experiences aren't all great. They can be full of fear and isolation and anxiety.
I can only imagine. But the need for a scale like this really pounds home the fact that these drugs are transformational. I mean, if I can read or hear about someone's experience in fine detail and still not totally understand it, I gotta say something big is happening.
I can't argue with that. The thing is, this isn't just about trying to find new treatments for hard-to-treat psychological disorders. These drugs unlock entirely new ways to understand human consciousness.
Let's recap what we learned today to wrap up.
Researchers have discovered that stress draws immune cells into the brain, where they release an enzyme restructuring the brain in a way that can lead to stress-related disorders like depression and PTSD.
Scientists have unlocked how plants use their internal clocks to combat environmental stresses like drought and soil salinity, paving the way for engineering super resilient crops in the face of climate change.
Scientists have revitalized an assessment called the Psychedelic Experience Scale, revealing new dimensions of the mind under the influence of substances like LSD and psilocybin.
Curiosity Daily is produced by Wheelhouse DNA for Discovery.
You can follow our show wherever you get your podcasts, and we would love it if you could take a second to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.